leading the society themselves too. So the question is then, how can we get more nuanced picture of Islam? Also, hvordan kan man få et mer nyansert bilde av Islam? And how can we better convey the rich culture and all the positive values that Islam has to contribute to our society? Also, hvordan kan man også formidle den rike kulturen og alle de positive verdiene Islam har å bidra med I vårt samfunn? To answer these questions and to give a different perspective on what Islam presents and could contribute in Europe to today in our society, we are fortunate to have Imam Ajmal Masroor here as a guest today. He's a British imam, a broadcaster, a politician and a journalist and a plenty more. Warm welcome to you, to our school, Ajmal Masroor, and I would like you to come now and say some words.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for inviting me today. I've come a long way. Of course, it's not every day that I come this far from Norway. And it's not every day that you get to ask, engage, and listen to someone like myself telling you honestly and truthfully what Islam and the Muslims and the identity crisis young Muslims are facing is all about. I promise to speak slowly. I've been warned that I should not speak at my normal speed because maybe most of you will not understand. But at the same time, I will not go very slow. That puts you to sleep. I want to start by telling you about a little bit of my background. My parents came from Bangladesh, a faraway country in the middle of Asia. Most people don't even know about it, but that's okay. My parents came to United Kingdom in 1956. My father came for economic reasons. He was very poor. His family was even more poverty-stricken than you can imagine. British government and Europeans at that time, most European countries, were desperate for workforce. They needed more people to work in the industries of Britain, France, Germany, and other. The local indigenous population were not providing enough manpower to be able to fill those gaps. The demand was high and industries were booming and they needed people. So in England, they reached out to the Asian countries where they were the colonial masters. India, Pakistan and Bangladesh, as you know, was colonized by Britain amongst many other countries. A lot of people from those countries were welcomed into Europe as value-added workforce for the European and British economy. And the black, the brown, the immigrants who came to these countries built the roads, the railways, the buildings, and empowered a country with an economy that became one of the best in the world. But very soon, they were no longer needed. Very soon, they became known as the immigrants who came to take over our country. Very soon, they became labeled as the enemy within. Ladies and gentlemen, I remember when I was 6 years old, my father took me out of his house, holding onto my hand, we're going somewhere. I think we were going to buy my first bike. And for those of you who remember buying your first bike, you would know how amazing that feeling is. So my father is holding my hand and he took me to his car, opened the passenger door, set me at the front, buckled me, closed the door, went around to sit on his driving seat. Before he could open the door, two white racist boys decided to attack my father's car with bricks. Two bricks landed on the windscreen of the car, broke the windscreen, and windscreen in big pieces of glass fell on me and my face. My face was cut with blood pouring out, and one of the bricks landed on my lap, and I was only six. That was my memory of going and buying my first bike in England. You understand what that means? Even till today, when I close my eyes and imagine the horror of those moments, the pain still is raw. I still feel it. What was my crime? What wrong did I do to those people who chose to attack me and my father in our car? My crime was, I was brown. I was Asian. And their pride was, they were English. They were white. They felt better and superior to me. They felt they had the right to attack people like me who had come to take over their country. That was a long time ago. That was 1976-77. Fast forward to 2015. We're still talking about the immigrants, the enemies within. We're still hearing on a daily basis, attacks, racism, Islamophobia, xenophobia, hatred, intolerance, sweeping our continent of Europe. And that to me is a terrible news. Just for a second, I want you to think of this. You close your eyes and think of Islam. Close your eyes and think of the word Islam. What's the first image that comes to your mind? I can second guess what that image is. Terror, bombs, extremism, 9/11, July the 7th bombing in London. These are the negativity that sweeps across our news media every day. Violence has become synonymous with Islam and the Muslims. My 10-year-old nephew, he's only 10, he came to me the other day and he said to me, "Uncle, I don't want to be a Muslim anymore." I said to him, "Why do you say that?" He said, "Because when I go to school, my friends keep calling me terrorist. My friends in the playground keep calling me extremist. My friends in the playground keep wanting to check my bags to see if I've got bombs in there. I don't want to be a Muslim anymore, Uncle. I don't want to be a Muslim anymore." He's 10. Should he have to go through that experience at the age of 10? No. Nobody should have to go through such experiences at any age. But the reality today is that young Muslims are under constant pressure of explaining themselves, constant pressure of denouncing extremism in the faraway land, in the Middle East, in Africa. They have nothing to do with those countries. In fact, most of those young people have never been to those countries in their entire life. And yet they're expected by their friends, in the media, and the country around, that they should condemn and distance themselves from such barbaric activities. Why should they be asked such a question? Why? When Breivik in your country killed so many people, were the Christians lined up in front of the media and asked, do you condemn Breivik? Were any young people lined up to say, do you condemn extremism? No. And yet, every Muslim is expected to be prepared by the media to respond to any crisis in the world at the drop of a hat. Why? Why such unfair treatment to your friends, your neighbors, your colleagues, your fellow citizens of your own country, just because they're Muslims? I want us to be very clear. I want us to be very clear. There is no God in terrorism. There is no God in murder and mayhem. There is no heaven waiting for anyone who murders, kills, destroys, and causes havoc on this earth. There is no religion on this earth that would support such barbarity. Nobody would. Yet why do we find young Muslims constantly in fear of their identity? Why do they want to hide their Muslimness? What are they afraid of? In fact, my question to you is, what are you afraid of when you are confronted by your fellow citizens who happen to be Muslims? What are you afraid of? I have done as much as I could, ladies and gentlemen, in my life. Facing extreme racism, facing extreme prejudice. You know, my English teacher told me when I was 16, I was sitting for the GCSE exams. I don't know what you call in your country, but after your secondary school, so just before you have come to the college, we do GCSE exams. So when I was sitting for my GCSE exam, my English teacher told me that I wouldn't pass English GCSE exam because I was not white. That's what she said to me. She goes, only white people pass English exams. When I passed my GCSE exams, when I got my results, I took my results to her and I showed it to her. It said, English literature, A. English language, A. Spoken English, A. She said to me, oh, you were lucky. You don't know what that meant. You don't know how I felt at that moment. Oh, I was fired up. I could have done anything, but I didn't. I looked at her and I said, you know what? Your brain is this small. And I walked away. Prejudice didn't stop me. I wouldn't have it. Anyone telling me that Britain isn't my home, anyone telling me I don't belong to Europe, they've got something coming. Britain is my home and I belong to Europe. You cannot stop that from my reality and my mind and my life. You can't. If my identity was skin deep, the color of my skin was determining my identity, what do you say to my children? My daughter, who is 9, my son who is 6. My parents come from Bangladesh, so I'm British, Bangladeshi, European, Muslim. 4 levels of identities. My wife is Hungarian, so she is Hungarian, European, Muslim. And our children are very confused, right? No, they're not. If you put my son and daughter together, my daughter is white, my son is brown. Do they belong to different continents because of their skin color? No. My identity, the young people's identity, isn't determined by the skin color. Never. Can never be. I want you and I to rise above this prejudice, this narrow-mindedness, this bigotry that has taken our country and our continent only backwards. And today's Islamophobia, hatred and irrational ideas of Islam and the Muslims is doing exactly the same thing as racism did to our society before. Muslims are not enemy within. They're not terrorists. They're not extremists. They're normal human beings. They just have a different faith. What faith do they have? What is Islam that they so proudly talk about? Islam is a lifestyle, a choice that they've made to live by the words of God, to believe in one God, to be good to God, to be good to their fellow human beings. That's it. Islam is about managing two relationships, ladies and gentlemen. One is my relationship with God, and the other is my relationship with you. If I can manage these two, I'm a good Muslim. If I can't manage these two, I'm not a good Muslim. If I'm only good to God and terrible to my fellow human being, God doesn't need me. And if I'm only good to my fellow human being and not good to God, I have no relationship with God. Islam is about balancing the two. Finding a balance between spirituality and material. There is no imbalance in life. So what are you afraid of? What is it that the Muslims make you afraid of? Oh my God, if I have Muslim friends, they'll take away my freedom. What do you mean? This is your country. In the law of our countries, freedom is inherent. It's written down in constitution. No one man and no one woman can take it away from you. Oh my God, he's going to convert me forcefully. What do you mean he's going to convert you forcefully? You're an adult. You have a choice to say yes or no. What are you afraid of? Oh my God, he's going to pray. And what? His prayer is going to be contagious and is going to be infecting your existence. Oh my God, he's going to demand halal meat. Halal meat? I can't eat that. If I eat halal meat, I'll become Muslim. Somebody said to me the other day. I said, if it was so easy to become Muslim, everybody would be Muslim by now. In the British island, the most eaten food is Indian food. And Indian food, 90% of the meat is halal. So 90% of British population should be Muslims by now. But no, wake up and smell the coffee. Less than 4% of British population is Muslim. Less than 4%. So no halal meat has ever converted anyone to Islam. No one praying next to you has given you a contagious disease, ever. What's the problem? What is the problem? The problem is nothing to do with Islam and the Muslims. Problem is to do with politics. Is to do with the media constantly spinning, is to do with greed, hunger for more and more and more of power, influence, money. It's nothing to do with faith or religion of any people. It's nothing to do with Christianity, it's nothing to do with Judaism, it's nothing to do with Islam. It's to do with something else. I stand here telling you that you may think, oh, him, when I go to places, they think, because I get introduced, he's an imam. An imam doesn't look like an imam wearing a suit, short beard. Usually an imam is wearing a massive turban with a long, massive Aladdin robe. Really? Do you think imam goes to sleep with his Aladdin robe and a turban? No. That may be something that he likes wearing sometimes when he's feeling like it. Nothing wrong. If Santa Claus can wear his robe, what's wrong with the imam wearing his robe if he wants to? But I just choose not to. There's nothing I can't do as a Muslim. Of course, decent. I stood in the last parliamentary election in the UK to become an MP. I didn't succeed, I became second. But for me to become second with nothing, no resources, no money at my disposal, to become second is a huge achievement for a man who grew up in an estate in a very poor family, attacked by racist people, told by the English teacher, you can't even speak English. It's a big achievement. I do work for television. Some people think I'm famous. I don't really care. How did I begin to work for television I did because nothing would stop me. Nothing would stop me from what I believe to be my call to action. And my call to action is to change the world for better. I'm inspired by my faith. My religion teaches me all that. But so do yours. And so do your parents. What's the problem? So when young Muslims are going through the identity crisis that they have, they're going through identity crisis because there is an extra pressure on them from the society to conform to a particular way. And when they don't conform to a particular way, especially if they happen to be Muslim with a particular religious background and ethnic difference, they find extra pressure and they can't cope with that. Should they be Somali? Should they be Norwegian? Should they be Muslim? Should they be... You can be everything you want. There's nothing wrong with you being Norwegian, nothing wrong with you being a Muslim, nothing wrong with you being Somali. There's absolutely nothing wrong. What's wrong with it? My daughter calls herself Benglish. Bengali and English together. Created a new word. Or when she's talking to her mother, she calls herself Hunglish. Hungarian and English together. Very convenient. She uses those terms. Why? Because she's very confident about her identity. She doesn't have a problem. Because we as parents have given her the confidence. You can be what you want to be, my daughter. You can be anything you want. Anything you want. You don't have to be Muslim or non-Muslim to be anything you want. You can be anything you want because you're a human being. So, I don't want to go on and on for too long. I want to say to you that I have come a long way to learn more about Norway and Norwegian culture. I've come a long way to engage with you so that we can build together better communities, more together communities, communities who are willing to not only share, but care, not only be together as friends, but be compassionate about change. But a community united, not fragmented because there are people who have a vested interest to keep us divided. That's what I'm here for. When you look at your Muslim friends from tomorrow, when you think about Islam from tomorrow or from today, please delete terrorism and extremism from your mind. It doesn't belong to Islam. Terrorism is not a monopoly of Islam. Terrorism is not, and terrorism has no religion. Terrorism has never had a religion. Yes, in the Middle East there is a crisis, I know. Yes, in the Muslim world there are crises, I know. But those crises haven't been caused by Islam as a religion or your neighbors or your friends who live in this country who are Muslims. They haven't caused it. So don't blame them for it, and they don't blame the religion for it. To finish off, when I was campaigning for the election, I knocked on someone's door, as I do, as you do. That's the only time you see politicians, right? They come and knock on your door, elections around the corner. So I was knocking on someone's door. He opened up the door and he said to me, "What do you want, you Paki?" Shut the door and walked away. Paki is a word defining me, black, brown, from Asian Pakistani background. Very derogatory, racist word. Disgusting word. And he shut the door. I knocked on the door. Again. He screamed from inside. Swore at me. I knocked again. And he screamed even louder. So I opened up his letterbox. In the letterbox? Postman dropping the letters. I opened up and I said through the letterbox, "Excuse me. If you are true man of courage and conviction, come and talk to me at your doorstep instead of screaming and shouting from your bedroom." I could hear a big thumping in my way. "It's coming. Big guy, open the door. What do you want?" he said. I said to him, "I'm standing for election." He goes, "Okay, you've got 30 seconds. Tell me why you're here." So I told him what I wanted to tell him in 20 seconds. I said to him, "I'm done. Here's my leaflet. Have a read." He goes, "Well, I'm not done with you. I need to talk to you." I said, "Go ahead." So we ended up having a conversation for half an hour at his doorstep. Half an hour of that conversation later, I left. A few weeks later, when the election was, the date of the election, are you familiar with the polling station where you go to vote? I saw him walking out of a polling station. He's got a walking stick and he's walking slowly. He sees me from far and he says to me, "Oi!" I ignored him. He says, "Oi!" I ignored him. And the third time he said, "Oi!" The man from the Lib Dems. I said, "Yes, I've got a name, you know, because I can't pronounce your name." I said, "What can I do for you?" He goes, "Come here." So I went up to him. He said to me, "You came to my house, remember?" I said, "Of course I remember." I said to him, "You must have voted." He goes, "Yes." I said, "You must have voted for your racist friends from the BNP, the British National Party." He goes, "No, I didn't." I said, "So who did you vote for?" He goes, "I voted for you." I said, "What? Why did you vote for me?" He said, "I've lived in this area for 30 years, and I've seen many Asian people walk in and out. They dominate the area. Nobody has stood in front of my door. Nobody has stood their ground with me for 30 minutes and argued their case. Young man, you convinced me that I can vote for you and I can trust you." A racist voting for me, I was astonished. But I realized it's not racism. He's suffering from fear. He's suffering from fear of the unknown. He doesn't know what I stand for. He doesn't know what I believe. So he's afraid. When I spoke to him and when I engaged with him, when I told him who I was, what I stood for, he understood. He related to me. He connected with me and he chose to vote for me. The reason why many of you are afraid of Islam and the Muslims, the reason why many media organizations, politicians are afraid of Muslims and Islam is because they know little about the faith and the people. They know very little about it. And conversations like this, ladies and gentlemen, would help open up opportunities for us to have honest conversation, dialogue. Let your fear be known. What are you afraid of? And let young Muslims know that they don't have to be facing challenges when it comes to their identities. They're as Norwegian as everybody else. They're as Norwegian as everybody else. So, my question still is, what are you afraid of? And young Muslims, what are you afraid of telling others about your faith and your identity? There should be no fear. We're free. There should be no fear. I'm not afraid. Do I look like I'm afraid to you?
No.
I'm not afraid because I'm confident about the goodness of my faith. I'm confident about the goodness of you as people sitting in front of me. I'm confident about the goodness of my country, of my continent, Europe, that this is a place where I am and I can be who I want to be. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you.
Break. So I'm wondering, would it be okay for you here that we could open the floor for some questions?
Yeah,
it's good.
There's already a question.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, let's take some questions. The gentleman over there and the lady here. Just give me one second.
What?
I saw him first.
I was actually just giving you a thumbs up.
Oh, thank you very much for thumbs up. No, thumbs up in return. Lady over here, go on. What's your question?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi everyone. My name is Alayla. I'm Muslim. I'm Somali Muslim. But there's something that has been disturbing me for quite a long period.
Close your mouth.
Okay.
Not close your mouth.
Sorry. Okay, sorry. As I have said, I'm Muslim, Somalisk, Norwegian, all together. But I have something that has been worrying me a lot as a teenager or as a youth. There are a group of people which are called Al-Shabaab. Some had been massacring, some had been killing, or had been causing a lot of problems to the world. But in my religion, as a Muslim, the word Shabab means youth. So when we say youth, it means youth. Or I cannot say being youth means to kill, to murder, or to batter. There have been cases going around in Kenya recently that so many people have been murdered. They were just like us. They were in class. They were learning. So it happened. They were killed with no genuine reason. I feel it because I feel innocent bloods were being dropped. Innocent youth who had no reason to be killed were killed. So my word to everybody here is united, we can make everything. It does not mean being Muslim, does not mean that I should keep off myself from you. You are youth. If I cannot tell you something, you cannot tell me something. What I mean is we have respect for each other. We respect, we have religion, but something which is very important is one should respect his religion or should also respect others' religion. We should not say after being a Muslim, I cannot talk to you because you are Muslim, and neither can I sit with you because you are Muslim. Religion is peace. Every religion means peace to everybody. So my word to you as youth, as teenagers, is please have peace in you. Please convey the word peace and not ignorance. We should not be ignorant. We should not hear from people who know nothing about what they are saying. Please be peaceful, be friendly. I believe youth are the people who can empower, the people who can convey, or people who can say to others. So if we use our time now, I think we can minimize a lot of problems that have been going around in the world. We can be, what can I say, we can be media, we can talk, we can say, and we can explain to people who don't understand what it means. We can help people to explain what they cannot. So, I love you. Lastly, I stand here and say Islam means peace.
Thank you very much. Obviously, very passionate from our own perspective, very important to hear everyone. So we hear yourselves. Go ahead, what would you like to say?
Yeah, actually, I had a question. What is the Muslim and Islam's view of the homosexual?
Okay, thank you very much.
Because a friend of mine tried to convert to Islam, but a couple of times he was rejected by some of the Muslims because he was a homosexual.
Thank you. Obviously, a very important question to be answered. There are two current narratives in the world, and I want you to understand it very carefully. One narrative says homosexuality is absolutely normal, nothing wrong with it. And there is another narrative which says we do not accept it. So there are two narratives. And two narratives have the right to exist. We can't push any one of those narratives away from our society. Islam takes the narrative that says homosexuality is not allowed. That's what Islam takes as the religious principle of the faith itself. It says sex outside marriage is not allowed. Any sexual relationship should be only within a couple, in a marital committed relationship. Now that is the Islamic principle. What do I do with that principle as a Muslim? Do I reject it? No. I, as a faithful Muslim, have to accept it because that's part of my faith. But do I have the right to discriminate anyone on the basis of their sexuality? No. Islam categorically says nobody can be discriminated based on any color, race, religion, sexuality, sin, virtue, anything for that matter. I have no right to discriminate anybody else. So as long as we understand that we all have the right to our views, because that's what our society teaches us, freedom of speech, And we have in our law very clear guidelines against discrimination. We're safe. And Islam is perfectly happy with that position, that we are not allowed to discriminate anyone on the basis of what they have as their lifestyle. Now, those Muslims who have rejected this person, Muslims need to be questioned about why they've done that. Because to become a Muslim or not to become a Muslim is not another Muslim's job. If I want to become Muslim, I declare my belief in one God, not my belief in other Muslims. So my conversion to Islam is my relationship with God. Who are Muslims to accept or reject it? It's not the right of the Muslims to say, we reject you. That's not their right. It's God's business. So my suggestion to the Muslims is, don't become the judge, the jury, and the executioner all in one, because that's not your business. If anybody wants to become Muslim, the door is always open if they want to. And nobody has the right to discriminate anyone. Just like I have said earlier on, discrimination based on my skin color is painful. Discrimination based on my religion is painful. Discrimination based on my sexual orientation is painful. And nobody should tolerate such discrimination in our society. I hope that answers your question. Thank you. Yes, young man.
Yeah, just a comment. I would just like to say that one of the most holistically intelligent persons I know is a Muslim, and he's from Pakistan, called Mr. Ramiz Alawala. So
I'm glad. Thank you very much for sharing.
People are everywhere.
Thank you very much. And intelligent people are everywhere, not just in one community, but in every community. Did you know, and let me just give you this example, did you know that in European society, where we are today, right now, before Enlightenment happened for Europe, there was a dark age. During those dark age or ages, there were other civilizations where there were no dark ages, including the Greeks. So, for example, Aristotle, Plato, and those people who are great philosophers of the West today, their work wasn't accessible to the Western world. It wasn't accessible because nobody understood Greek before. Guess who translated the word Aristotle into legible Latin? Muslim scholars, such as Ibn Rushd, Ibn Khaldun's work. If these scholars who come from Islamic background did not translate the books of the Greek philosophers into Latin, you and I won't have the Renaissance we have in Europe today. So we should not forget the connection between each and every community. We are all interconnected and interdependent. We share civilization and knowledge. We share our cultures and our heritage. We do. We're human beings after all. So like you said, we can't claim monopoly on anything. We only have one world, right? Only one world. And we have to share it. And it has been shared for hundreds and thousands of years. And the quicker we understand the way to share it better, the better we'll become as a society. I hope you are waiting to share. Let's take the last question that I'm going to give you. Last questions from anybody. Lots of gentlemen have asked questions. What about ladies? Are you worried about asking questions openly? It's just a challenge. Any last question from anybody? Otherwise, I'm done. No, good, excellent. I have you've already asked a question, so I'm going to ask you to hold on. We have this video that I wanted to show. Is that okay?
Yeah.
When I saw in the UK and in the world so much trouble, I decided to set up my own TV station. Online, it's called the Muslim version of Netflix. Have a watch. I believe something very simple. We should all be involved in informing people, inspiring people, and influencing change. Let's start those changes from within. In the core of our being changes, the world will change. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about alchemy.
Alchemy is an online television platform, somewhere between Netflix and the iPlayer.
It's content that you can access through your computer, your laptop, through your tablet, or your mobile phone. We've got a very wide range of content, and it's actually something that people haven't seen before in terms of projecting Muslim or the Islamic culture. Programs about religion, programs about history, programs about countries, about people, their culture, their food, their fashion, their design, their dreams, their aspirations. And this channel is about creativity, thinking, widening your horizon, reflecting, finding Allah in fun and learning. There is a distinct Muslim identity emerging, and we call that the global urban Muslim. The same mindset exists whether you live in Sydney, whether you're in California, whether you're in London, or you're in Kuala Lumpur. These are people who are sophisticated, educated Muslims. They've got all the latest technology. They've got young families, and they love to travel. But at the same time, they care about their Islam. For us, these are our customers. So this channel would look for the best filmmakers, best commentators, best producers. I've personally worked over 20 years within the UK broadcasting industry, for the BBC, for Channel 4, and I'm bringing a lot of that experience to this project. The whole business is based on an ethical framework that we've spent a lot of time thinking about. The key thing is, from a business perspective, with that development in technology, we don't need to have all sorts of very, very expensive kit. And that means that we can come out and launch a station like this with so much less money than we were looking at a couple of years ago. From the perspective of a non-Muslim, this really has the potential to go global. It's lifestyle for a billion people.
Alchemy is not about studios or presenters or expensive gadgets. No, it's about reaching the world. From Jakarta to California, the very best of Islamic culture.
So for those of you who are interested in watching Islam in Color and accessing the Muslim version of Netflix, this is the new platform. Forbes magazine and various other very interesting international newspapers and magazines have rated us as one of the best Muslim startup of this decade, which is fantastic as far as we're concerned. So if you're interested, go ahead and watch. But just to finish off, you want to change the world, don't you?
Yeah.
We all do. This is what happened when a priest was giving a story. It's a beautiful story. A father came home and he said to his son, my son, can you please do me a favor? Give me 10, 15 minutes, I need to do some more work. Son said, Daddy, I've been waiting for you whole day. You want to work more? Please, play with me. Father said, okay, I bought some magazines. Bring me the magazine. Son goes to the room and gets the magazine. The father opens up the center page of the magazine. In the center page, there is a map of the world. He pulls the center page. And he tears the page into small pieces and says to the son, my son, go and we'll all put the world together. Go on. Go and put the world together. The son goes away to the next room. The father thinks to himself, I've got about 2 hours at least because I've not given him any pictures or a photograph. So the son will not disturb me for a long time. So the father is working away. 10 minutes later, the son comes back and says, Daddy, I've done it. I've done it. What do you mean you've done it in 10 minutes, son? What did you do? He goes, Dad, I put the world together. How did you put the world together in 10 minutes? The son says, Daddy, I cheated. What did you do that you cheated? He goes, at the back of the picture of the world, there was a photograph of a man. And I know what man looks like. When I put the man together, the world came together. Do you understand? When I put the man together, the world came together. When we put together you and I in the right way, with respect, tolerance, and acceptance, the world will become a better place. The world will change if we change. So the challenge is with you. If you're willing to change, the world will change with you. Thank you very much.
For showing up. Now can I take lunch there?
Thank you. Or thought work.
Mine's in my house.